I've told you about them forever, so you probably already know the names of my three sponsors, right? For example, if I asked you, who's the lawyer that tech entrepreneurs trust because he understands the startup community? You probably know it's Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. And if I asked you, where should you send your friends who want to build online stores? You probably tell me, Shopify.com, because Shopify stores are beautiful, they're designed to sell, and Shopify makes sure that there won't be any tech support for you to do because they're easy to set up. Finally, if you have a friend who says, hey, I want a phone number, and then if somebody presses one, I want it to go to sales, and two, I want it to go to tech support cell phone number, and three, I want it to reach my home phone number and all that stuff, where do you send them? Of course, you send them to grasshopper.com. Three great sponsors, and now let's start with the interview. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and home of stories with entrepreneurs all over the world, as you're about to find out today. You'll see why we're talking to a guest who is in the dark today. Really interesting about where he is and why he's there. But first, I want you to know the goal of this interview. I want to find out how big insights lead to big business successes. This is the story of a founder who discovered the right market and the right platform and what happened to him after that. Rajat Garg is the founder of Social Apps HQ, social media monitoring, actionable analytics, engagement tools, viral apps, and so much more in one easy-to-use platform. Rajat, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
The first big insight you had was when you were building an app for Amazon's A-stores. What was that insight that you had?
So A-store was basically going to allow anyone to create a mini Amazon store on any theme within three clicks. We had a goal to have like 10,000 stores set up within a year, and we got to like 10,000 within 2 weeks.
Hang on, let's take this slow. I want to make sure that people understand it because that's so significant that I don't want it to just fly from one ear and out the other. I want them to pay attention to this. What you knew was that, well, what you were going to do is allow people to create mini stores that had a small selection of Amazon products. In those stores, anyone could create it, and they would make a commission on what was sold through those stores, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And you were going to make it available to people like me. Maybe I say, hey, you know, I want to create a small store where anyone who wants to do interviews like me can buy and see what the right mics are, the right lights, the right computer.
Yes.
I just create that store. Within three clicks using your software, I get a commission on every mic that people buy, everything that they buy.
Yes, definitely. Okay. And now, That's where we realized that there's an army of small businesses who kind of want similar features and want to do similar things as big companies do. But do not have the technology and support for it.
And this army of small to medium-sized businesses, most of us ignore. But you worked at Amazon, and you still didn't know that they existed or didn't realize their size. Is that right?
Not initially. Like, we had a large number of affiliates in Amazon. But when we launched this, we actually realized the potential that they had to offer.
I see. Okay. So you left Amazon, you created this product for them. Even you were blown away. You said you had this idea that you were going to get 10,000 stores over how long?
Over a year, and we got it in 2 weeks.
So instead of over a year, within 2 weeks, and how much revenue did you generate from it?
We at Amazon, we generated like 32 million in 6 months period. So it was a mind-blowing product. And you know, there were a ton of learnings through that.
I see. I apologize. So you're saying this was when you were working for Amazon. You did this for Amazon,
yes.
Not for yourself.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Got it. So now
I would be rich and sitting on a boat.
I was going to say you wouldn't be talking to me right now. Well, hopefully actually you still would be talking to me. And
yes,
I mentioned earlier where you were. What country are you in today?
I'm in India. I'm in a city named Delhi, out of India.
And how'd you end up there?
So 2 years back, there were some family things where my parents had met in an accident, and I think that was the tipping point. Professionally, as also after Amazon, I worked at a startup, and it's been several years there, and I was looking for something new. And I felt that I always had wanted to do something. I knew that there's a tide coming in, which is, you know, social because of Facebook and mobile. And I felt if I have to do it, then this is the time, and no better time than this, so let's do it. And that's how I ended up in India trying to do it.
And you did see that incredible opportunity with small, medium-sized businesses. That was the big insight. We're going to talk in a moment about the other insights that you just mentioned, specifically Facebook. But I'm curious about what life is like for an entrepreneur in India. For example, I went to Argentina because I knew internet would be everywhere, and it really was everywhere, including local coffee shops, basically in the street. In India, if you want internet for your office, what's that like?
That's a very interesting story. So, you know, I actually didn't have much of a working experience in India. I did my schooling and then had left for United States, did my master's and everything there. So when I came back, I, you know, first getting an office was a challenge. I went through like 10 agents, saw so many offices, and finally found a person who actually showed me what I wanted and got an office. Then I, you know, went to MTNL, which is the internet provider here, and said, okay, I want an internet connection. What do I need to do? So they gave me a form and they said, okay, fill it and stand in line and, you know, submit it. It sounds easy enough. So I went there, submitted it. It's like, oh, it requires something else. You need to go to one other line and submit it. And then I go to that line and then they're like, oh, you had to fill this thing up. You have to go back to the other line. And I'm like, after a day and a half of, you know, standing in different lines, I finally went to the head and I said, dude, I've been standing in so many lines. Just take the bloody form. It's just a one-page form. Just take it. So he said, okay, I'll take it. It's going to get done. And I'm like, so is there any ETA? Is there some expectation that when this will be done? I'm like, yeah, don't worry. You know, it will get done. Don't worry, it will get done. So I'm sitting in the office with no internet connection, no other person there, and wondering, like twiddling my thumbs, wondering when this internet connection is going to show up. And like after a week, I went to this lineman who actually does the internet connection. I found him somehow. I'm like, you're like my elder brother. You have to help me out. I just come here. And then he's like, oh, I will do it for you, man. You're my like my younger brother. You're just starting out. I'll help you out. And so he, as a favor, he came and installed the internet line for me. And I had no idea, like, you know, if I had not done that, how many days or weeks would have passed by before I would have gotten an internet connection.
You know what? As a guy who lived in the U.S., who worked at Amazon, where you're used to, you know, you're used to things just working, it must infuriate you to be there and have to deal with lines and having to talk to a lineman who will just hook you up. Does it?
I think it is. Initially, it was when I moved here. I think the first experience like this and a few others were very, very infuriating. But over time, you realize that you have to just go with the flow. And there is a different way of getting things done versus what used to happen in US. So it's just that you have to adjust yourself. You can't change the system. You have to change yourself to go with the flow.
What about some of the benefits of being there? I know that time is not one of them. You are now doing this very early in the morning, and I really appreciate. What time is it where you are now?
It's 4:30 a.m.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much for doing this interview that early in the day. So what are some of the benefits of being in India, starting your business?
See, there is a huge talent pool that is available here. And a lot of people are very young, very energetic. There's also a problem with not finding the right person, but once you find the right people, it's actually pretty good. And the second biggest thing is that you can control the cost quite well. Especially for a startup, literally hiding in a cave and just coding for a few months or a year, this is an ideal place to get started at. In states, those costs can add up very, very quickly. And here you can, afford a little larger team and get shit done quickly.
What about little things like if I wanted a coffee, I can get somebody to go bring it over, or grocery shopping?
Oh, of course, of course. I think family support is immense, that is there. Even you can hire a guy, hire peon, which was a luxury in US. Here for very, very low cost,
A guy to do what?
and
I'm
with
sorry.
hire a peon who at a very, very low
Oh,
cost,
a
but
peon.
in
You mean someone who just go to the grocery store and do your shopping for you, who go get coffee when you need it, who go buy you the right light bulb if your light goes out?
You will realize that we are all getting fat because of him, and he's the thinnest.
All right, so then we understand the first insight. You found this market, they have good money, they're good people to work with, and there's an army of them, as you described earlier. What was the other insight that led to Social Apps HQ?
So we were looking at, as I was saying, we were looking at Facebook, we were looking at mobile, and we saw the tide coming. A lot of others did as well. The biggest things that we saw was these small businesses were looking at, Starbucks and Southwest Air, trying to figure out how they can do something similar as these guys are doing.
Similar in mobile and social?
Similar in mobile and social
Okay.
space. And we felt if we can build a product that allows them to create a presence or start a campaign in these mediums without actually having to talk to a developer, investing time in thinking about product and everything else, then there is a market out there. And that proved right, because the moment we built the product, there were a lot of takers for it.
And so, was the first product called Welcome Tab?
Yes.
What was
So
Welcome Tab?
Welcome Tab was a very, very, very simple app. It just allowed people to type in a VoiceOver editor, add some content over there, and create a Facebook page and add that as a tab, default landing tab for Facebook page.
This
And
was.
it went where
Just to explain it to people who are, I guess everyone at this point knows about it, but I'll remind them. There was a time before the Facebook timeline for businesses that Facebook fan pages would just have a static page, like Mixergy.com, excuse me, Facebook.com/Mixergy was just a static page. And I could design it using Facebook's tools, or I can come to you and use a WYSIWYG editor, which would make it really easy for me to design it nicely without knowing how to code. Is that right?
Yes,
How did you know that was a problem that people had? Why didn't you just say, hey, I know how to design Facebook fan pages? Facebook is meant for the masses. People will figure out how to use this. They don't need me.
so we saw some of the Facebook tools. We saw how people are trying to use it. We looked at forums, and people were, bitching about it, complaining about it. Oh, we need to do this, we need to do that. Why is it so hard? So on and so forth. So we said, okay, there is, these, if you just make it a little easier for people to, walk through two steps, publish it, and have this on their page, then there's a market for it. And we were able to get went from 0 to 5 million visitors within few months, which was very, very well for us.
Oh, I
We
want to hear
felt
how people even found out about it, but let me first make sure, and I mean, let alone 5 million people coming, but let me make sure that I understand how you figured out the problem. You went to message boards and you saw people complaining about trouble that they had?
Yes.
What
So,
message boards and what kind of problems were they complaining about?
they were complaining about, hey, we are trying to upload a picture and we can't. How many people came to our app? I have no clue. I use a Facebook tool for this thing, and it's not publishing right. I don't know HTML. How do I, make it look the way the other person has made it look? So it was all over the board. I think what the original tool that was out there well, basically a text box where you can just type it in and it will show the text just as is. So we said, okay, it needs a little bit of improvement. And that's where the insight came up from.
What message boards did you go to hear about this? And I'll tell you why, and I'll tell the audience why I'm spending so much time on this. I've heard entrepreneurs say that they get their ideas by looking into message boards to see what people were complaining about. In fact, Heaton Shaw told me that if he were going to start a similar business to mine, he wouldn't sit and try to come up with a great idea. He said he'd look at my, at the time I had a feedback form that was public. He said, I just go back there and see what people are complaining about with Mixergy, and then I'll go and I'll build a similar system, a site that solves those problems. That's where I would start. And so when I see that an entrepreneur has done it, I want to really understand how. Where was the message board that you went to?
So we went to like Search Engine World, Webmaster. We also went to a lot of Facebook forums that were related to that particular initial tool. So if you remember a couple of years back, all these applications had their own reviews section, had their own discussion board section. So you could find a lot about how people are using it, how people feel about it, by just going through those reviews and discussion boards.
I see tools like Welcome Tab would have had reviews, and I could have gone in there and seen what people thought of Welcome Tab.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, who was the leader in this space whose reviews you were looking at?
So at that time, there was a Facebook static FBML app that was kind of it was built into the Facebook system, and it was getting a lot of traffic.
Okay, and do you remember one complaint that people had with that, especially that was especially big?
It was simply like I think the biggest thing was people were looking at something else and they're like, "Okay, how do I produce it?" And I don't know HTML.
Ah, okay, I see that beautiful page. I want to create something like it. Show me how. Okay, and it wasn't easy for them. You told Jeremy, who pre-interviewed you, he's our producer, that you kept the product small. What did you include in the first version?
So in our first version, we basically had a very simple YCVIC editor that solved that core problem. And then we had a small graph showing how many people came to their page. At that time, Facebook Insights did not provide tab-level analytics. So people really had no clue as to how many people are coming, and we solved that problem. And people actually loved us for that particular graph.
What did you leave out of the first version?
So we actually left out picture upload. It sounds funny, but at that time we were like, I had one server and I knew if I allow picture upload, it will exhaust all the space on it. And I wanted to figure out a way to make money. And I was saying, okay, if it is really growing, maybe I can charge some money for uploading a picture. So we gave them all the help, saying, hey, you can upload it on Flickr. Here's how you import it. You can upload it on, you know, Facebook. Here's how you import it. But we left that out intentionally for first version.
All right. So I understand how it fits a need that people have. But I don't know how you went from 0 to 5 million views, users, I guess, in 5 months. How did people even discover you?
We were a bit lucky. That's what I'll say. I think initially I emailed everybody I knew, just about everyone I knew. And a lot of people just adopted from there. But then luckily I emailed you know, a lot of movie actors, a lot of music bands, a lot of soccer teams. And every person with a big Facebook page saying, hey, do you want to use our app? Do you want to use our app? And luckily, Vin Diesel basically took on and he started using our app. One of the big soccer clubs out of Brazil started using our app. And then just from there, it went viral because we had a small logo at the bottom saying, powered by Social Apps HQ and create your own. And people would just click there, come to our site, you know, start creating more and more and more tabs. So it just went viral from there.
Vin Diesel, the actor from Fast and the Furious, he responded to a cold call email that you sent him saying you can use this for your Facebook page?
His agent did, but we believe he knew about it.
How did you know how to reach his agent?
You know, if you keep searching hard enough, you'll find emails of the president of the United States.
Is Vin Diesel a guy who you're a fan of? Is that why you chose him?
Oh, yeah. We are big fans of him. So once, you know, once he started using us, we did a little bit of a victory dance in our office.
That's phenomenal. And you say we. At this point, you had people who were helping you out.
Yeah, we initially got our VP of engineering, Puneet. And I think by the time Vin Diesel started using us, we were four people. Two others had also joined us.
And where was the revenue coming from?
So we were charging just $5 a month in the start. And the revenue started coming from basically people wanting to upload pictures, did not want to have Social Apps HQ logo at the bottom, so on and so forth. So we created a small pricing tier where, so, you know, if you don't want to have these couple of things, just, you know, use PayPal, pay us $5 a month, and that would be taken off.
And PayPal was the only way you were accepting money?
At that time, yeah.
And it was for uploading photos, getting rid of the image. Was there anything else that was big?
Not at that time. Later on, as it picked up, we basically added a ton of other apps. So we basically had not just Welcome. We, you know, started adding, and we went on. In the year, we added like 29 different applications.
In addition to the Welcome tab, it was 28 others.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And that's when we basically started, you know, charging, not accepting PayPal, because there were a ton of problems with the managing subscription business.
For example,
it's not very easy to upgrade and downgrade a PayPal subscriber.
People have to cancel and then resubscribe?
Yeah, and people just get confused with that. So that is a very big challenge. If they want to add more pages, that's a very big challenge. It's just not as flexible. And then upgrades and downgrades, even if they go through all this cancel and all that, it doesn't do prorating and all that stuff. So we started using a company named Recurly for our subscription billing processing.
I know Recurly. And you're still using them?
Yes, we are still using it.
How long after you launched Welcome Tab did you start charging?
After 4 months.
4 months. Why did you wait so long?
We felt that our product was not really ready. And I think the biggest challenge we had was we were trying to be sure that we are providing some value to the user. And just convenience was not enough in my mind. In terms of the value that we were creating, because someone else can come out and create that value. So we actually talked to a wine club out of India and said, hey, do you want to use our apps? And do you want to, you know, tell us how the results are? Because we'd like to do a case study on you. So they started using a Welcome. We had a sign-up app by that time and a few others. And within a few months, they had like 2,000 signups, and out of which 100, 200 of them actually became lifetime members, paying them a few hundred dollar worth of money to become lifetime member. And that's when we realized that actually, you know, we are providing value. The end customer is actually going to make money using this particular tool. And at that point, we started charging these people.
Ah, I see. And did you get to use them as a case study to bring in other businesses?
Yes, we did. Yes.
How did you know what other products to build? I understand Welcome Tab, but how did you know that signups was one thing that you should focus on, or what else to do?
There were two things that really drove it. One was that our customers were very vocal and very demanding. So they basically said, hey, it's nice that you're providing this app, but I have to go to X provider to get this app? Or can I do this in Facebook? And that was a forum post somewhere. And we will basically keep looking at it and saying, okay, people are asking for sign up app. People are asking for, you know, adding a Twitter tab on their Facebook page, so on and so forth. So we built out based on what customers asked us. And the other thing we looked at is this space saw a lot of competition come up in a very short span of time. And we said, okay, we need to be complete and we need to be unique. So we had pretty much everything that everybody else had, and plus a lot more.
I see. So you saw that they built a sign-up box and you said, all right, we should have that too. Or they built some, I don't know what, you wanted to add it to. That was one of the...
Yes, that was one. And then we added a lot more as well.
You do have a ton of apps, even today. How does actually being in India enable you to create so many apps? Does it?
I think it's not really being in India. We basically spent a year building them out because we wanted to be sure that all the customer cases are taken care of. Even if I was in States, I would have probably done the same. So I'm not sure if there's an advantage there.
But 28 apps, that's a lot of man hours, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's definitely a cost advantage overall that we are able to afford here. But I think from a matter of business point, at least at that time, it made sense to incorporate all the apps. And one other thing is that we focused on a platform. So in the later stages, adding an app was literally figuring out a CMS where a user will enter the data and figuring out a rendering so people can see it within Facebook. All the inner workings were taken care of.
And it seems like also a lot of these apps are fairly similar. Where was the list here of the apps that you had? I just clicked off of it. Let's see. Social apps. Here we go. So you have the... video tab seems to me very similar to the photo tab, which is similar to the multi videos tab and the tweet tab and the RSS tab. It seems like they're similar, right?
So the way you can divide it is there are content display apps and there are engagement apps, and each of them solve a particular use case. So if you look at, you know, SMBs that were small businesses that were our target, if you say, hey, use the RSS tab for incorporating a Twitter feed, and you can find the Twitter feed by going down, looking in the right, and there's one URL like this, then you click here, take the URL, put that in, they will get completely confused. So when you're looking at that particular market, you have to make things very, very, very simple. So yes, tweets tab and RSS tab could be one tab, but tweets tab requires you to just put a handle, your username in there, and that's it. Whereas RSS, you put a URL of the blog. So it's just from a customer perspective, it makes sense to have a lot clearer value proposition with each of the tab. And so that's content display. And engagement, the contest apps like photo contest app and essay contest app, each of them have their own peculiarities. People are writing a lot of text in essay contest, so they want much more of formatting capabilities.
The reason I was bringing it up is just to say it's not brand new apps built from scratch. The code base is similar. The product is similar. You're just taking a use case and you're productizing it.
Yes.
Like Twitter, what you said with Twitter and RSS. But how are you getting feedback on this? I'm looking on the site and I'm saying, I see frequently asked questions. I know that there must be a way for people to email you, but there it is, it's on the bottom, this contact us. But I don't imagine that's how people would say, it's too difficult for me to get my Twitter feed into your RSS tab. Please build something that's easier. How are they communicating with you, or how are you figuring out what their problems are?
We get a lot of emails. We just get ton and ton of emails.
And how are people... So where is that going? Where they're going over to your site, to socialappshq.com, going to the bottom, and then using the Contact Us page?
So basically, we send a weekly email, which has, and even the moment you register, you get a welcome email. And it's all from support@socialappshq.com. And it has my email and everything else in there. So we try to maintain an open dialogue with our customers, and we just get tons and tons of emails, almost on a daily basis. I think that's what we have been lucky with, actually. Our customers talking to us and telling us, oh, well, that's not working.
And it is helpful, actually, to hear people complain. Let's talk a little bit about celebrating. You guys do a lot of celebrating.
I was talking to Jeremy about it, and we sold, once we put a PayPal button on the first day, we got like a few signups, and we made $15 that day. We were so happy. Like, we're like, okay, the business model is proven. People are ready to pay for us. And we went out there and with a small team, and we found a deal site and found a, bowling alley that was listed there, and we ended up buying those tickets and went there. Turns out it was a crappy bowling alley. And we spent a few hours there. We basically shut down each one of them one after one. But yeah, at the end of the day, we feel that we have to celebrate our mini victories whenever they are, because it keeps our, it keeps our morale up. It keeps, we are able to share whatever is good with the team. People are engaged, and people feel good about building something that is solving some user's problem. And we are very open in the company as to what the customers are talking about, whether they like it or not, and all the team knows about it as well. So that has really helped us out.
Those tabs that we talked about, they were really big back when Facebook would send people who clicked on facebook.com/Mixergy to a static page. It was beautiful. I build my static page using software that was WYSIWYG. People would come to that page. Maybe that page asked for an email address, so I'd collect email addresses. Maybe it asked them to like me in order to get access, so I'd set up one of those like gates. All that life was really good. And then Facebook said, no more of the static page. From now on, we're going to show a timeline of all the latest things that you do. And your industry went through turmoil. What happened to your business when that happened?
That actually was a very, very, very interesting time. So, we were measuring everything. And we saw our traffic drop to our apps by 90%. And we saw all these people around us, all these companies in the US, all these companies in UK, saying, oh, the life is couldn't be much better. And after timeline, we are getting so many more visitors. And I'm like, we're like looking at our traffic and we're like, what the hell is going on? Are we missing something here? And then, of course, a lot of people just shut down and moved away from Facebook. We actually knew that 3 months before we got a hint about this, and we knew that this is coming. But we kind of delayed it, and I think that was our bad, because we didn't know for sure, and we wanted to see it before we can make those changes. At that time, I remember clearly that we sat down, all of our team sat down. We said, okay, fine. We are stuck. There are two ways out. Either we basically say, okay, it was a good run, let's leave the product aside and then move on, or should we figure out how do we go forward from there? We looked at what marketers are spending time and money on in this space. And we found that people are working hard to manage social media. People are doing a lot of work in social media monitoring. ad management, so on and so forth. So we spent next 6 months just working very, very hard to build out these products so that we become a much more of an all-in-one solution.
Essentially rebuilding your business because 90% of your traffic went away. What about
Yes.
this, that you guys were charging on a subscription basis, so month to month people were paying you.
Yeah.
What happened to your subscription revenue when the change happened?
So there was an initial drop. There was a pretty heavy initial drop. But after that, things stabilized as people started to see value from the other products as they started to come out. So we released Social Planner very quickly out. And a lot of people who were going to quit and said, okay, yeah, that's great. And we told them what is coming next. And they got excited about that. And as we started releasing those stuff, people stuck on and did that. You started using those products.
So, when you say that you dropped off some subscriptions, what percentage of your business went away when Facebook went from pages to timeline?
30% went away right away.
30%.
Yeah, went away right away.
Okay.
So that was a major hit for us. I think for any business that is dependent on other platform, that is the big insight that do not really depend on someone else to so much for building your business because they may change the rules of the game and you are suddenly in a soup.
On the one
So
hand, you get to grow quickly because you built on the Facebook platform. That was a big insight that you had. On the other hand, if they change, you get to get hit quickly and you don't have a say in it.
yeah, you don't have a say.
Is it fair to say that you were protected because you had a subscription-based business? You know, people.
Yes. If it was one time, I think it would be totally in a big. We would be in a very, very big problem. I think there was one other thing we enabled just a couple of months back before this change happened. We enabled yearly subscription and started offering them like 33% discounts, so on and so forth, for paying yearly. And that actually locked a ton of people down because people upgraded to the yearly subscription.
Wait, so you're
So,
saying after the timeline changed, people who would have canceled went annual instead?
before the timeline change,
Before.
like 2 months before the timeline change, we started offering this. We didn't offer this in terms of planning about timeline change. It was just a natural thing that, hey, let's try to lock in more revenues. That really helped us out because people who have paid yearly, they stayed on and then they got a chance to try out everything else that we were offering.
Social media planner is the ability for me to create a message that will go out to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and do it at a time that I specify, right?
Yes.
And that's something that people are going to hang on and wait for because they wanted to be able to schedule their Facebook timeline messages. It was very responsive to the timeline change. What I'm curious though is, how did you know this is what you should launch? How did you know what to launch next? Your whole business was in turmoil. Most people would be freaking out. As you said, many of your competitors just closed down. And under those circumstances, you have to figure out the next big thing that's going to keep your customers sticking around. How did you know what it would be?
At this point, we had to take certain bets. Initially, it was like our customers were saying, okay, build this, build this, build this. And they were for us. But at this time, we were a bit clueless. I'll be frank, we were a bit clueless. We were saying, okay, the whole premises of launching the initial business is gone. And if we have to stick, we have to find out what people are spending time on right now. And what are they doing in social media marketing space to drive value? And we figured out there were three additional things that we don't have. And we basically said, okay, we are just going to build them and see what people react. It's like, the problem is if you wait for customer feedback, they will give you feedback on your existing product or something aligned to that particular product. They will not tell you, okay, go build as a, at Amazon, go build Amazon EC2, because nobody is really thinking about it. If they think about Amazon selection, this product is not available, can I have a better shipping model, so on and so forth. So if you have to think beyond, you have to take a bet. Luckily for us, they have started to pan out.
You know what? I have to apologize. I'm still not seeing it, and maybe it's because I'm too much in my own head about this. The idea that of knowing what to come up with, what product to build, is still a tough one. I understand that you can't ask them because if you ask them, they don't know what they want. They can't react to just to nothing. You have to give them something to react to. But how did you know? Was it that all these products are fairly small, and you said, we understand our users, let's just create some. We'll ask them a few questions about their frustrations.
So we looked at companies, what are the companies? And if you, there was a investment bank out of UK that did some research on various social media related companies, and they divided them into, 20 different buckets. And we said, okay, let's look at these buckets and say, which are the areas that we need to attack and address? And we came up with three of them. We said, most of our businesses who have a Facebook page want to increase fans, want to drive traffic from Facebook to their website. So giving them an advertising option or managing their advertising budget makes sense. Most of them are, of course, spending time posting on it, because otherwise nobody will come to them given the new design. So let's make that easy for them. And there were companies like, Hootsuite and many others in that space. And then there was the whole social media monitoring piece, which we believe is where the real value is. Because a lot of conversations are happening, and you can try to understand a lot of things about customer behavior, do product research, market research, competitive intelligence, so on and so forth. So that was the third thing that we came about. But I think, the first two were still easier to come up with. The third was a little harder to come up with because it was a very challenging product to build, because you have to crawl a lot of data to make and drive insights. From a product perspective, from a market understanding perspective. But I think that's where it boils down to. It's just that you have to take bets at that time.
That's what it seems like it was, that you made educated bets. You looked to see where the industry was going, what your customers wanted, and then you took a couple of shots there. Has anyone ever told you that it's a little tough to follow what the business does because you do so much?
Yes. So when people come and start using us initially, I think it's for them it is a bit too overwhelming. For people who start with who have been with us for some time, they have seen our growth, they have seen us add products, and they are more comfortable with it. So what we have tried to do is we have tried to send them emails that try to educate them about various use cases as to what can be achieved through the platform.
I see. And I guess if you spend some time on the site, it makes sense together. I didn't know how to explain it when I started. Now, as I'm looking through it to try to come up with questions that will help the audience, I was also getting a little bit of difficulty. But I get it now because there are those apps that we talked about before. There is the social planner that tweets out Facebooks and so on a schedule. There's social ads, the page that I'm on right now where I could buy ads on Facebook, pay-per-like to increase your Facebook fan pages. And then there is the monitoring service.
So the way we explain to our customer is, if you are a guitar sales company, enter a keyword, learn guitar in monitoring, and you'll find a list of everyone who is talking about learning a guitar. You can respond to them and engage with them through social planner, and then drive them to your Facebook page with a sign up app on it to get them to convert.
Gotcha. And that's how I would get their email address and start the business relationship with them. What size revenues are you guys doing?
That's a for now. We are cash flow positive. I think that's a good part. We are cash flow positive, and we are growing.
You told Jeremy you wouldn't tell me the revenues because of an incident that happened. What happened?
So you're going to get a heart attack when you hear this, but when we made initial hires, one of the we were strict on referrals. But what happened is we were very, very open within the company. We share used to share all the revenue numbers. We used to share everything that was coming in. So one of the guy just suddenly came to me and said, "Okay, I'm going to leave the company, and this is my last day." And we're like, "Okay, what do you want to do? Why are you leaving?" Like, I have to just do it, and I have to leave, and I have this other thing I need to do, and he won't talk about it. 2 weeks later, we realized that he left his friend. So his batchmate was in our company as well. And those two were combinedly stealing our code. Luckily, they couldn't touch the database, but they were stealing the software. And I think of course, they had something about setting something of their own, and so on. So we fired the second individual. We went to the police. We encountered a lady cop and said, "Oh, this, and they stole the software code." And she's like, "So they stole your computer?" And I'm like, "No, the computers are still there. They stole the code." And she's like, "But what did they steal if the computers are still there?" And I'm like, "Oh boy, this getting anything," because that's a challenge. Like, people in law enforcement are not really educated about the technology, have not kept up with the technology changes. So we filed a complaint and make sure that they're not going to use it and the things are destroyed. But we stopped sharing the revenue numbers, and it affected us very on a personal level, because we're a small team. We felt, at least I felt, that we were very close, and we limited the revenue sharing and all those things to just 2 people. Later on, I'm going to shift a little. Later on, what we realized is that getting too strict and getting too, shut down is also not good. So we have found a healthy balance. We do not share revenue numbers, but we share everything else as to why we are doing it and what we
Have
are
you done
doing.
over 1 million in sales yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. What do you
Not yet.
feel about guys like Nathan from Heyo, who are in similar space? He is bringing in a lot of money, and I think he even got investors recently. I could start naming all kinds of competitors. Shortstack, I'm looking at my calendar. I just interviewed the founder of Shortstack a few hours ago. He's in a very similar space to you. What do you think of all this competition in your space? How do you compete with them?
See, all of them have been changing their strategies over the last year. Like Heyo, they were something else, and now they are Heyo.
They were Lejure, now they're Heyo. Oh,
Now
first,
they are
the
Heyo.
name Lejure is hard to spell. I even misspell it, and I've got it. I should have it memorized by now, but I misspell it sometimes. But they shifted their product too. Now they're going more mobile.
So again, there's the same impact. Like, Facebook design changes happened, and a lot of things moved. I think the competition is there, and it kind of keeps us on the edge. But it's a healthy competition. The companies that are out there right now, they are in there to innovate and push the boundaries and get customers to realize the true potential of social media. So when I look at the competition, I think that's great. We have also started thinking about raising some investment because we feel in a SaaS type business, you need to spend quite a bit of money in terms of customer acquisition. So that's one. The second thing we are also looking at is mobile. A lot of apps, we are converting them into, being able to publish that on mobile as well. We are making those changes to make sure customers really get the full value from our platform, as well as we do what's necessary to get to a bigger revenue number.
Even, well, you know what? I just forgot the question. I hate that I just forgot the question I was going to ask you. I'm surprised that doesn't happen to me more often because I have the question ready. I pay attention to see what else there is. And how many registered companies do you have?
We have 400,000 registered users that represent around 1.3 million registered businesses.
400,000 people, companies that have given you their email addresses who are on your mailing list.
Yes.
Have you emailed them other companies' offers? I feel like in the info marketing space, when people have a mailing list, they start to offer other info marketing products from others. No, you keep it simple, just you.
Yes. We send them, in the initial days, we send them a lot of education material. Then we start sending them case studies. So we do a weekly case study and we start sending them out. We just feel that it's wrong. Customers, give you email based on a trust. We don't want to misuse it.
All right, I've got a quick note here, and then I want to ask you about almost dying. And this note comes to me from Christopher Klotch, Claunch, via LinkedIn. He says, "If anyone hasn't told you how badass you are lately," and then he starts telling me about how badass I am. And basically, what he's saying is he signed up for Mixergy Premium, and because of what he learned there, his third email campaign today, using what he learned. His third email campaign, which happened to run the day that he sent it to me, got click-through rates that are about 15% higher. And then he says, "Thank you." And without getting all mushy and cliched, I love you, man. So, Christopher, I love you, man, too. And I'm glad to see that this stuff is working. I'm assuming that the email session that he took was the one by Justin Premick of AWeber. And that's one that I've gotten a lot out of. One of the things, I'll give you a quick, quick tip that I got from that session, and I use this all the time. Justin Premick of AWeber, who taught that course, said, "Don't ever send an email to your whole list. Do not A/B testing, even where you do 50% gets this message, 50% the other." He goes, "Take a small portion of your list. In our case, we take 5%, and another one that gets 5%, and do two different messages to those. And whichever one gets the most click-through rates and open rates, that's what you send to the rest of the list." We actually do three different groups that get 5% to test, and then whatever works best goes to the main list. And that's one thing that we learned from Justin, and it's helped us increase our click-through rates. Christopher learned from that. He's seeing some real results. If you're a Mixergy Premium member, take that session. It's really well done. And it's not because of me, it's because of Justin of AWeber. If you're not, sign up. You get dozens of courses like that and hundreds of interviews like the one that you're listening to today, all available to you as a Mixergy Premium member. Learn from them, see your business change, and hopefully you'll do what Christopher did, which is send me a note because I'm always curious about how you guys are using what you're learning and what results you're getting from it. Mixergypremium.com. Go sign up right now. You almost died. How did you almost die? You know what I'm talking about.
So I'm a pilot. I fly Cessnas and Piper and so on and so forth. So I was in Seattle at that time, and it was my first solo cross country. On my way to the flight, on my way to the Portland from Seattle, I kind of lost where I am and got into a wrong valley. And the weather turned bad, and a lot of wrong things happened at the same time. And before I realized, I was in the clouds. And as a VFR pilot, you are not supposed to be in the clouds. And so I was like, okay, I just got in the cloud. I'm going to, remove, take some power off, go down, and I'll be out. And as I'm coming down, 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 and I'm like, oh boy, I was just like few, 50 meters or 100 meters away from treetops. And I'm like, oh boy, I'm going to die today. And I just put the full power in, and I'm like spiraling up and up and up. And I was doing that for good, 5, 7 minutes. And the radio communication broke down, so I was not in contact with the ground staff. And I'm like, these clouds can go up to like 40,000 feet, and I have no idea. I'm kind of lost where I am, so I don't know what to do. And suddenly, there was this thin layer of cloud, and I could see sunlight coming from there. So I just pointed the plane there and flew out of the clouds. And when I got out of it, there were like two layers of clouds, and I was in the middle. It was so beautiful. I
I
was like,
wonder you were
okay, I've.
confused though. Two layers of clouds, you don't know which side's up. Or does that happen?
No, in a Cessna type of thing, no, because you cannot really do a flip on the Cessna.
Okay.
It was beautiful, and I was like, oh wow, this is great. And I'm like, okay, I don't know where to go because I don't know what is below these clouds. So I can keep flying between these two layers, but I need to find a hole so that I can get down. So that was an interesting experience. I got in back in touch with the air traffic, and then they directed me to the airport.
You know what? When I was a kid, I wanted to have a near-death experience just so then I could have a real FU attitude to the world because, hey, I almost died. This is like my second life. I get to do whatever I. Do you have that? Did you change because of that?
I think that actually makes you a lot more humble.
Oh, not more
Because
arrogant the way it would have made me. It didn't make you feel
yeah.
invincible. Bring it, world. No.
I thought about it earlier on, but after that, no, because it's like it's just you realize how fickle everything is. But so it has made me a lot more humble. I think the startup experience has also made me understand a lot more things than what I used to do before. It's been an interesting experience.
Well, thanks for sharing that interesting experience with us. If people want to say thank you, what's a good way for them to connect with you?
Just email me at rajat@socialappshq.com.
Cool. What city are you in, by the way, in India?
Delhi.
Delhi. So maybe there's some people in Delhi who are listening to us right now who can say hi to you. All right, now I'm going to be the first person to say thank you. Thank you for doing this interview and sharing the story with us.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me here.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it.